title of the sermon, you know, When the Going Gets Tough, rung home yesterday with me. Rang home, I should say, in the proper tense. I was in a store yesterday, and there's this lady came in. She looked like about 60 years old, and she was in one of those motorized wheelchairs and everything. Cheerful expression on her face, but she was pretty much a paraplegic. And anyway, and after she was through, the gentleman who waited on her, he said, "Let me get the door for you and escort you out to your vehicle." She had a really nice Dodge Caravan. It was all constructed just for her. The steering wheel had the different gadgets on it, and the foot brakes, she could hand control the foot brakes and the accelerator. Amazing to see that woman do that. And you know, in my mind, I said, you know what? That puts my problems in a completely different category, minimal. You just think about how fortunate and grateful that we should be that we can get up on our own two feet and walk. I mean, some of us may stagger a little bit in walking. Some of us may have aches and pains, but at least we're able to get there on our own. And she couldn't. She had to have a mechanical machine to help her around. But I admire somebody like that, that's not given up, that she's not going to let a physical issue get her down. And I really just, that made my day just to see, some inspired me, I should say, that that woman has been doing what she's doing. I didn't know her anything. But you know, for all the accomplishments, money, and success that is attained and earned, there remains within us a streak of vulnerability. Mark told the story in which Christ reached out to the Gentiles on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee and then departed, and the disciples then were on a voyage, not necessarily of their own choosing, but at Christ's command. They were not alone, but acted as if they were. The world around them suddenly became one enormous storm of wind, waves, and rising water. It was literally the fright of their lives. I'm reminded of a lady I knew a few years ago. She's dead now, but I was having dinner one evening with her daughter and several other people in this restaurant, and we were talking, and this lady was British, and she was elderly by this time, but she was reminiscing. We were talking about things that sort of made us uneasy and scared and frightened. And she was talking about living during the Blitz of 1940, when Hitler was attempting to bomb Great Britain into submission. As a girl living in a small British village near the English Channel in the vicinity of the White Cliffs of Dover, Mavis, that's her name, sounds odd for an English woman to have named Mavis, but that was her name. Mavis described what took place in the evenings. With blackout curtains drawn over the windows and all the lights were extinguished in the households there, suddenly from across the channel from France, the sound of Nazi Stuka planes were coming into earshot. The planes were heading toward London. Her village was not a particular important strategic target, so they would fly right over that village at night. And the planes could be seen, Mavis recalled, outside their home, you know, there on moonlit evenings especially. And what would take place was they would gaze up in the skies, and against the moonlight, they could see the swastikas imprinted on the tails of those airplanes. She said that it was chilling to see those planes flying over at night with the moon shining on them, knowing what was going to happen to hundreds of people in London. Prayers were audibly heard on their lips to protect those men, women, children, and soldiers during those terrible nights of the Blitz. Again, a classic case of fright, like the apostles in the boat. You think about that. I mean, it's like if we were at war and we'd stand outside and watch planes flying over to bomb Lakeland. It would be frightening to see something like that. Christ was asleep in the back of the boat. And the stern should be the more proper term. And the picture of quiet confidence and contentment. The disciples reproached Christ for not caring enough about them. Yet Christ reproached them too by asking why they were afraid. In fact, the Greek word that describes what Christ said to the calm the storm, you know what he said? Actually, the Greek, it's very literal. Shut up. He told those waves in the water, shut up. And everything became so calm, peaceful out there. Well, Christ disarmed and deactivated both the storm and the fears of the 12. Psychologists tell us that infants are born into the world with two inherent fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. All other fears are either acquired or induced. There's no denying that as we grow older, our fears multiply. Well, what fears have you acquired since childhood? We usually, our parents or whomever we're close to, usually transfer their fears into us. My mother transferred her fears and phobia of snakes to me. I fortunately tried to overcome it, but don't ever put a snake in my lap or you might end up in the hospital, you know? But I've learned to I don't run anymore when I see a snake. In fact, I let a snake go his proper way and I go my proper way and everything. So there's a little respect there. But here's the issue. We're afraid of the unknown. That's what it's all about, including life and death. Now, I don't know how many funerals through the years I've conducted, but I'll tell you one thing. I don't know everything about death. Because once you're gone, nobody's ever come back that I know of except the Lord. And too bad the Bible didn't describe it a little bit better, or when Lazarus died and the Lord brought him back. But we don't know what that next step is. But out of faith, we must believe what God has promised us. And that's the most important thing. If not, I think we'd all lose it, don't you? So that's where faith kicks in both life and death. But we buy into a culture that tells us that we can avoid death if we have enough money, power, or control. Well, even in the church, we strive for immortality rather than resurrection. You ever go out to the cemeteries and look and see some of the big monuments, particularly the Victorian monuments? There's some I've seen where they'd have, there's a minister when I lived in Louisville, Kentucky. This church, he died around 1909. They had a full bronze statue of him holding his hands up like this with a Bible in the other. I like mine that way, so when you think about it, design one. No, but what I'm saying is immortality comes through a lot of those monuments, big mausoleums, which are beautiful. But at the same time, it's not going to mean that your memory is going to be a legacy down the years, except as almost a museum piece. So you know what? Our hope is not in the present for being remembered. Our hope is in heaven, and that's where we should think about. Christ is the one who promised not only a good life, but a good death. If we give ourselves to others, cease clinging to secure materialism, put that trust instead in God, then even death can become a gift. But isn't that easier said than done? A lot of times it is. G.K. Chesterton, a noted author, said once, "We can see great things from the valley, but only small things from the peak." It is in the valleys and storms that we find God. And I think that's very true. When we're going through troubles and tribulations, that's when we get real close to the Lord. But after things calm down, we kind of move our own separate way, you know, and let things go and whatever. And we don't get as devout as we normally do if we're under duress. But something occurred among the apostles that may seem unusual. Christ calmed the storm, but the disciples' lack of understanding concerning him caused them to be more afraid. But When we move, this is a little thing, tidbit of practicality. When we move from the mindset of fear to one of gratitude, there's discovered new life. There really is. How many of us are really grateful for everything we have? Are you grateful when the little things come? Somebody brings you a cupcake, or maybe perhaps sends you a card, or something that's, it may not be anything profound, but are you touched by it? Or are you just looking in the, especially birthday cards, are you looking in the birthday cards, shake out some green stuff? A lot of times that's what we look for. And we tend to forget the little note that people write. Every time somebody sends me a card, no, I don't shake the envelope out to see if there's any money in it, but I really am touched because that person took the time, due to their kind thoughts, to send me a note. And I get numerous notes in the mail. And I appreciate that because it means somebody's thought about me enough that they wrote me a letter or a note. So, you know, that means so much. But little things really matter. That's the important thing. But gratitude should kick in every time. You know, I think a lot of us regret people that's already gone to heaven, that we were not kinder to them than we were. And we feel bad about it, you know, or things that happened that we shouldn't have said, but we never got the chance to make it up to them or say, I apologize. So a lot of times, gratitude, if it's an integral part of our lives, we don't have to worry about that because about what I said about feeling sorry or guilt trip. Because gratitude goes a long way. And, you know, a question here, why would the disciples fear Christ more than the storm? Remember that we are mere humans who prefer the comforts of the normal over that of the strange or abnormal. What they had just seen, I hate to use this term, they blew them out of the water, literally. Because you don't see people tell storms to shut up. That's not normal. But then today, we see a lot of things that may not be as normal as we think. So, you know, in life, I've learned this through my short years on earth, that a lot of times, a little flexibility can go a long way. Have you ever seen a piece of rubber or something get dried out? It's not very durable then, is it? So we need to be a little bit more flexible, even in our mindset and in our faith. You would be surprised that the people through the years have talked to me, and they were devout Christians, but some of the things that they believed. Now, most of it was not worth a hill of beans, but at the same time, it would raise eyebrows for others. So I've encountered a lot of people like that through the years. And what I've had to do is I still have to love them, you know? And I think that's the important thing. Yes, they may not dot the same I across the same T as I do, but you still have to love them, and you can't run them out of the house, you know? So what do you do about that? Well, you can continue to pray for them and thank God that they're in your life. Sometimes they can be a headache. Sometimes they can be a blessing. So always remember that anytime you encounter somebody that may be a little bit more different, a little different than you are, just to think, well, God created them and they're very unique. I didn't create them. So, you know, and you can go your own way. But always remember that every person that encounter you should thank God that you encounter them, even those who may not be all that nice either, you know. Perhaps your influence might be able to change them. But remember that we are mere humans who do prefer the comforts of the normal over the strange or abnormal, even with their intimate and close relationship to Jesus Christ. The disciples were still in a fog about the mission of Christ and a lack of understanding that went along with the territory. Our expectations about people and their accomplishments can take upon various reactions. Christ was asked by the disciples if he was insensitive to their plight and their life-threatening situations. You know, I've even had people come to me sometimes and say, well, you're a minister. You shouldn't say that or you shouldn't think that or whatever. Listen, I'm human. I mean, I've never done anything, I mean, that would cause scandal in the 35 years since I've been ordained. If I have, forgive me, but I don't think I have. But I'm not like that young man told me here a while back. He was a young minister. He says, I am never tempted. I have no temptation in my life. I said, when that gorilla jumps out of the plane and the parachute and jumps on you, I said, you'll be coming to me and say, I do believe in temptation. You have to be careful of getting too arrogant in your faith as well, because that arrogance can trip you up. The disciples did think they had the market cornered on their spirituality till they encountered Christ. Christ really brought them into a new perspective and light on their faith. And the same way with us. But the disciples, as intimate and close as they were still in the fog about the mission of the Lord and a lack of understanding that went along with the territory. Our expectations about people and their accomplishments can take upon various reactions. Christ was asked by the disciples if he was insensitive. Of course he wasn't. He wouldn't have calmed the waters if he'd been insensitive. For all too many Christians, there is expected from God an attitude, now listen, for him to obey our every command. Like, you do it yesterday, Lord. Or, oh, genie, grant me that immediately, you know. We treat God a lot of times like that. And we shouldn't do that. God will bless us at God's own timing. Remember that. The disciples only called upon Christ while near the point of disaster, which caused them to reach a breaking point of desperation. Even though Christ had been available all along, however, due to their self-reliant attitude, the Lord was a holdout until the last moment. You ever pray when you lose something? Or do you wait, or is that on the last bottom of the list of things? Because you're going to look for it. You may have to throw some mattresses off the bed, pull a bed out, maybe go in the kitchen and look through the garbage or whatever. And then it strikes you, maybe I should ask the Lord to help me. He might be able to help me better than I can with my own GPS. And usually you'll find what you're looking for. I know none of you are going to confess that you do that, but I'll do it some. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But a lot of times we hold out. And we want to be self, you know, we want to be individualistic. That's what we want to be. We don't want to call upon him. Be dependent on him. Well, you know what? I'm kind of glad I'm dependent on the Lord. It gives me a sort of a connection. So don't be shy about asking the Lord to help you out. Because, you know, when the disciples were at that breaking point, they could have drowned if they, you know, of course Christ was there with them. He wouldn't have allowed it to happen, even though Christ had been available all along. In the same light, we do, as I said, stroll down a similar boulevard during those moments of placid tranquility, giving only superficial commitment to God. God is just our friend, it's imagined, with whom we are prone to shelve like a book at times. Like you go to your bookcase, oh, I'm going to pull God off the shelf right now. It's time I check him out. And then you put him back on after the crisis, back on the shelf after the crisis is gone, and go your merry own way. That happens to all of us. However, when the figurative tidal wave or tsunami changes our peaceful lives into chaos, we look to God out of desperation, as did the disciples, to save our necks. Sometimes we create a mess from our own blunders. Further explanation is not required because we've all experienced it at one time or the other. We are crowded in the bow of that boat with the disciples in an allegorical sort of way. Do we jump overboard or commit ourselves to trust God completely? Let's not kid ourselves. We know that God is the one that we are to rely upon. Remember Psalm 46? God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The Lord of hosts is with us. Come, behold the works of the Lord. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. That ought to settle matters there, shouldn't it? To know that God is there with us all the time, 24/7. All we have to do is call upon him, and he will be there. He will answer for us and everything. You know, if God is our strength and a very present help in all circumstances, if that is not a part of our faith, then God help us all to get through life with just our wits. To create a cheerful and comfortable faith, and we all desire it, whether we know it or not, does require complete trust, even during those tumultuous periods. God is our past. God is our present. God is our future. Don't forget it. Let us pray. Oh, Lord, sometimes we act as if we're agnostic, that you don't really exist except when we need you. Lord, let us never go in that direction, but always look to you as our only source of hope and strength. Without you in our lives, we're useless, literally. Help us, oh God, that our faith through coming to church, through various actions on our part, oh Lord, such as studying the scriptures, singing hymns, and doing what we need to do, oh Lord, to better our faith is the most important thing which counts. And on top of that, may our faith in action be shared with others who need strength to discover you. We ask this in the name of Christ our Lord. Amen.